Again, brothers and sisters, this is the Alchemist of Orpheus Stain. Yeah!
There he is, the one and only.
You are listening to the Alchemistry Labs, and I am your DJ, Orpheus Stain, on Spirit Plants Radio, broadcasting around the world at spiritplants.org, over 9,000. Turn on, tune in, and visit us on the web at radio.spiritplants.org for schedules, playlists, archives, and more. The show is also played on Chaos Radio Austin, where it doesn't have to make sense. This week the show will be running 90 minutes, yes, 50% more show, in order to encapsulate my subgenius X-Day experience. We'll be beginning the show with Enter Shikari, No Sleep Tonight. And then we'll hear Mindless Self-Indulgence, Bitches, the Music Mix. After that we'll hear the first meows of X-Day, followed by the amazing Brain Cat with Enjoy Your Cat. Then Bishop Stick, Priestess Pisces, and Cat Feather live at X-Day doing some meow rock, even more meow mix. The little piece I call Who Wants to Meow When I Pee, even more meow mix remix mix.
Songs for per request.
Meow. Meow. Meow.
I gotta tell you, I think this is the dumbest fucking shit we've ever done, and it's awesome.
That's baseball!
Now, this actually starts out apparently, Teeters.
Yes.
What's up? All right. You can bring it up. All right. Actually, if we can get somebody to take this out of my hand. Teeters looks like he's got something important and impressive.
Oh, okay.
Direct from Dobbs.
Okay.
Where did Stang go? The minute I look for anyone, they're in the shitter. That's how that works. I think that's the hide from Pisces location. That is the shitter. All right, just give me a few moments while we wind up here. We're already 11 minutes behind schedule. No, we'll save the meow mix for later. Unless the audience once would like to do a round of meow mix while we wait. I'd like to hear the audience start the meow mix song. I'll point the microphone at you. And on the count of three. I said on the count of three, Beans. Jesus. One, two, three. Y'all suck at that. That's fantastically bad. Yay, you suck. You suck at singing a meow mix song. You must be proud. You know what? Maybe we'll give you an award for sucking at singing. And in fact, I say the first Bobby Award of this night is to all of you for sucking at singing the meow mix song. Everybody congratulate yourselves for being talented enough to blow a commercial icon that's in all of our heads. Yes, you've got an award. Everyone has an award tonight, even if you don't hear your name mentioned because you suck at the meow mix song. Stang, should we get started? We're already behind.
Hey, anybody want a meow?
How the fuck did I end up on
this? I don't know. How did I? Hey, let's meow. Come on, meow.
Meow?
Meow.
Meow.
Right, meow.
Meow.
We're going to meow one more time.
Right meow.
Yeah. Right meow.
Right meow.
Yeah, right meow. Ready? Start it.
Liver. Pink corpses, please deliver. Hearts and colons, this I crave from the corpses that I see. Please do things, bring me this, and I might have a chance at bliss.
I do have one question. Why does it hurt when I pee?
Why did you punch yourself in the nuts? That would be why. Wait, did Bob punch you in the nuts?
I asked if he could play. I guess they need a separate mic input. I don't have an electronic pickup for testicles. I don't know what we can do. I mean, can't we rig something really quick? If your nuts are really maracas, I mean.
In the perfect world, after the X's come, none of us will burn when we pee.
This is true. And your back won't hurt. And that would be awesome. Did you catch it from the toilet seat? Did you catch it from the toilet seat? I think it might be VD. Oh, why does it hurt when I pee? She wants to know, folks. That was fucking beautiful. Why are you never on stage? Music.
So you gotta turn it on.
And if you hadn't turned it off. But ah, what wisdom drops from the mouths of gods.
Awesome.
Guys, what's the deal?
Are you sure that was sounding okay?
I'll be honest, fellas, it was sounding great, but I could have used a little more cowbell.
And if Bruce Dickinson wants more cowbell, we should probably give him more cowbell.
Damn, Work for me. I gotta have more cowbell.
Hello, and welcome to Mindless Self-Indulgence, brought to you by... If you know the name of the track you'd like to hear, press 1 now. Using your touch tone keypad, please enter the first 4 letters of the track you'd like to bounce to, followed by the number sign now. You have selected Bitches. To find out why bitches love you, press 1 now. If bitches love you because they know that you can rock, press 1. If bitches love you because they know that you can rhyme, press 2. If bitches love you because they know that you can fuck, press 3. If bitches... You have selected Bitches Love Me because they know that I can fuck. To find the nearest location where bitches love you because they know that you can fuck, press 1 now. Please enter your 5-digit zip code, followed by the number sign, now. You have selected Throughout the Projects. If this is how it should be done, press 1 now. I'm sorry, that is not a recognized entry.
Oh,
are listening to the Alka Ministry Labs. I'm your DJ, Orpheus Stain, on Spirit Plants Radio, broadcasting around the world at spiritplants.org or 9000. Turn on, tune in, and visit us on the web at radio.spiritplants.org for schedules, playlists, archives, and more. And then we'll hear the amazing Brando with Bad Kitty No, or Mindless Self-Indulgence with 777 Bitches and Bitches, DJ Cam Remix, followed by Enter Shikari No Sleep Tonight, Orpheus Remix. And then we'll hear a poem by Reverend Hazel of the Windmills, Crude Matter Bliss doing some more meow, Annie and the Mystery of the Jankum Huffing Chamber, Reverend Satan with God is Watching Us Kill Each Other, and finally a piece by Janice. And we'll be closing the show with a 28-minute Dr. Jam featuring Reverend Hazel of the Windmills on sitar, Suds Bashaw on backing guitar, lead guitar by Slander Bob, bass by Bishop Stick, turntables by DJ Tude Means, and kazoos, slide whistles, etc. by Satan. And featuring Bill Drummond on Why Recorded Music is Dead.
Very unfocused, but that's okay.
William's gonna start heckling you.
Ooh, a heckler. Well, the mini actual Meow Mix song from the commercial. Oh, really? I could sing it like Dr. Evil did in,
Please, go ahead.
Let's see. I like chicken, I like... No. What? There are lyrics, you know. I like chicken, I like liver. Meow mix, please deliver.
These are background music.
Well, if you're gonna play something I can sing to.
What Lagoon wants you to do is to say meow 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 meow.
Of course I know he wants that. What do you thank me for? I have cats. I know how they talk. Meow 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 meow. That one's in heat.
Thank you very much.
Praise Bob.
I think we'll have the Meow Mix every night. Meow mix, meow mix. Let's see here. Where's the next? Meow. Excellent. He did an encore. Check that out. All right. So, again, it's open stage. You musicians or ranters.
No.
You guys are, like, I have trouble with cyclohexane's name because it's like, I don't know how you say your own church name when you're drunk. That's like too many syllables for most people when they're drunk. Another one, actually, you should come up, his name is so long I can't remember it. Nobody heard him, though. Meow, 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 meow. He's not very meow mix. He's just not. He's a level beyond meow mix. All right.
The name is the very esteemed universal philosopher of absolute reality, Reverend Frodus Pishaw. But you guys know me as Suds. See, I don't do meow mix. I do ventriloquist cat.
Meow, meow. Meow, meow.
All right. Meow, meow. Meow mix? Meow, meow. See, I'd tell Legume to come on stage and rant, but he'd just do meow mix. Should you be concerned that the last maintenance record on the porta potty was from 6:15? No, you should not, because some of the porta potties, as you may have noticed, have special signage that explains that those porta potties are indeed jinkum humping chambers. And that porta potty that you chose seems to be one of the designated jinkum humping chambers where they are not to be flushed.
The mere quantity of vodka in my belly makes me wonder how I'm standing. It's impressive. The people I was just talking to probably wonder where I've gone. It was to the porta potty. Sign that said it hadn't been serviced since 6:15. It is what, 6:30 now?
Yes.
6:30, or is it July 1st already? Motherfucker. Why does it hurt when I pee? I just realized I stole this song from someone else. Please don't publish this anywhere. I might get sued by some hippie in Cleveland. This is totally fair use.
Okay, that's fine.
Do I have an exit strategy? Dear God, I don't have an exit strategy. What do I do?
Sing your way out of it.
Hurry, hurry! Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Sing your way out of it. That's the only thing you can do.
I can
do.
Steal another song.
Sing your way out of it.
Should I steal another song?
If you must, sing your way out of it.
Okay. Why the fuck not?
Sing your way out of it.
I had a lot of vodka.
Troubled man, Lord, I'm blue. And now I won't be blue always. I'm gonna come and my Lord coming in my back door someday. Gonna lay my head on that old railroad line.
And I don't remember the rest of the words.
Make them up. It's time to go to sleep. Is it time for you to sleep?
It's really time for me to go to sleep.
Was it the vodka you consumed?
It must have been the vodka consumed.
Was it the smell from the porta potty? It must have been the smell.
It must have been the smell.
Did it weaken your constitution?
My constitution, I do decree. It stinks in the porta potty.
anything. And end note. Yay!
A somewhat of a sort of a kind of an answer for you.
Okay.
Evidently, the people that kept the records in the Port of Sands. They messed up, and it has been serviced since you've been there. But you just didn't see the markings. So don't you fear, the Port of Sand is there, and it's clear for you. It really, really is.
Then why does it hurt when I pee? It must be redeemed. Not from the port of party.
Not from the port of party.
I guess I must not try to pursue a political career now. It's all over. Because someone's probably filming right now. Who knows?
And it's quite entertaining to listen to your voice and your singing. I had no idea that you had such those pipes. I would be happy to have you on the stage every open jam night. I love you, Annie.
I love you, Pisces. You are so beautiful. You are so lovely. You are so fishy.
You're such a flatterer. And flattery will get you lots of places. After all, you want to untie my shoelaces?
Dirty bit. I want to be Fergie, you know.
Give Annie a hand.
Woo! Okay, I'm gonna go start talking to people again. I should probably go.
All right. We love you.
I love you.
We love you and have.
I missed you.
I missed you too. Have a great evening, dear.
You too.
Hooray for Annie one more time as she walks off the stage. By the way, this is why I love open mic, because that was absolutely awesome. But I think somebody else should stand up here for a few minutes, because I'd like to kind of walk around and I have a man I'd like to kiss on for a minute, and so keep playing.
I'd like to minister to the audience.
Absolutely, absolutely. This man would like to minister. We'll get out of your way.
Yes, friends, I would like to minister to the audience at this particular point. This wonderful time. I'm referred to as Reverend Satan, but...
Reverend Satan! Yes.
Yes, indeed. But I have a wonderful... In this time of wonderful... love and unity between all of us here. Very, very special song that I... Yes, love and nudity that I wanted to share indeed with you all. And I'll only mess up with this two or three times, so, you know, it'll be copacetic. There we go, that was the first one. Try that again.
must stand in the way of any of the above. We can fantasize and rationalize nearly any atrocity. It's our iron will to destroy and kill that brings us unity. So we can kill each other, ever together, decimate our fellow man. So bring body parts in the soldier's art, won't you please lend a hand? Children are the ones who will grow to win the race. It's to them that we must pass the baton to be used to bludgeon a fate. So why should we wait to indoctrinate them into the hate we feel? For the task is ours to bless them with scars in their minds which will never heal. So we can kill each other together, through insults on our breath, tearing body parts in the soldier's heart in a rainbow of death.
That's the next part of the song. If I haven't completely driven off anyone at this particular point in time, you're going to have to use your imagination for it, because it would feature a timpani, a trumpet, and guest vocals by Mr. Michael McDonald from the Doobie Brothers. Boom, boom. Boom.
The 10th machine knife, trying to turn M16. A blood path makes the planet clean. We can torture each other, we'll scatter ourselves all over the crops and the fields and make the flowers grow. We can kill each other together with our firearms open wide. With my brother dear and my sister, commit fratricide. We can kill each other together with our firearms open wide. With my brother Jim and my sister Nick, let's commit fratricide. God is watching us. God is watching us. God is watching us kill each other. God is watching us. God is watching us. God is watching us kill each other.
Every time we breathe, or we shit, or we eat, or we sing, or we dance. No. Is it because he's so handsome? Maybe. But mostly it's because J.R. Bob Dobbs does not give a shit. Now you might be saying to yourself, oh, Jehovah, Wan, and Buddha, and Brahma, and Krishna, and all those other supernatural powers of the universe don't give a shit either. My SO left me, and my dog died, and my job sucks, and the rent's due, but that's where you're wrong. You see, the supernatural powers of the universe care. They just don't like you. Jehovah One cares. He cares enough to watch your every infraction and write it down in his big ledger book in the sky. He watches what you eat and when. He watches every time you polish the bishop or flick the bean. He takes careful note of the positions in which you copulate, the speed at which you drive on the highway, and how often you pack into a little stone building at 8:00 in the morning and sing poorly. And don't forget about the Buddha. Oh no, he cares. He cares enough about your soul that he wants you to wash away all of its flavor by sitting in one place for days on end humming, and he won't even let you eat bacon. Exactly. And don't get me started on Ra and Freya and Osiris and Odin and all those other old school pantheoners. Sure, they'll send you rain one day when you pray for it, but the next they'll burn your village down, and the day after that they'll turn into a goat and fuck your mom. Well, fuck those guys. That's the kind of service you get when you put your faith in gods who care. Well, maybe. Well, I hear you say, maybe I'll just put all my faith in science. Science is supposed to be objective. It won't put on all that crap on me. But that's where you're wrong again, friends. Because even the gods of science, like Richard Dawkins and Charles Darwin, will have you believe that we are related to Homo pinking sapiens. Well, fuck those guys, too. We don't need them! We don't have to listen to them. Hell, we're sub-geniuses. We ain't gotta listen to nobody! And when we crawl from this battlefield for the soul onto the perfectly manicured lawn of J.R. Bob Dobbs, what is it he asks of us? Just $30. And when we ask him what it is that we should do or how we should behave, he just says, do whatever the fuck you want. Now get off my lawn and go slack off. If you want to eat a pound of bacon on the steps of a mosque every Friday morning, you eat the hell out of it. If you want your enemies strucken down in a painful and hopefully embarrassing manner, you're going to need to do it yourself because Bob has got shit to do. And if you want to spend your week in the woods with a bunch of friends and strangers doing whatever the hell you feel like because you got nothing better to do and it's better than the whole entire year that you've had so far put together, well, more power to you. And that is why we praise Bob.
Members of the band. On background guitars, Sud Kishaw. On lead guitar, Slander Bob. On bass, Bishop Stick. On the turntable, Two Beans. And on kazoos, slide whistles, and other assorted instruments, Zayton.
Now the controversial artist and musician Bill Drummond with his theory that recorded music is dead.
The History of Music, Part 19. That's the title of this talk. What? Part 1, 2, 3, 7, 11, 13, and 17 were and are almost irrelevant in this talk. That said, I want to start by reading something that I wrote almost 3 years ago and was taken from The History of Music, Part 17. This is it. All recorded music that has ever meant anything to you or me or anybody else is speeding its way to irrelevance. The whole canon of recorded music that has been stockpiled over these past 110 years is going rotten, rapidly losing any meaning for anybody except historians and those that want to exploit our hatred for nostalgia. The very urge to make recorded music is a redundant and creative dead end, not even an interesting option
fit only for the makers of advertising jingles, ringtones, and motion picture soundtracks. The sheer availability and ubiquity of recorded music will inspire forward-looking music makers to explore different ways of creating. Away from something that can be captured on a CD, downloaded from the internet, and consumed on an MP3. And the very making of recorded music will seem an entirely two-dimensional, 20th century aspiration to the creative music makers of the next few decades. They will want to make music that celebrates time, place, occasion. There may be those that want to, but we will think of them in the same way as we now think of those who work with bygone art irrelevant to tomorrow's world. I can't wait to hear the music that is being made 100 years from now. These notions may awaken me. So that has been done quoting previous parts of the history of music. From here on in, it will be strictly part 19, made up of fresh thoughts, only marshaled the past few days. There is no way that I want to hazard a guess at what the music in 10 years' time, let alone 100 years, will sound like and mean to us. We will have to wait here. Instead, I'm going to give a brief skim through the salient turning points as music has evolved over the past 131 years. You may think it a highly subjective skim. I accept your parallel history of music, Part 19, might be totally different to mine. In 1876, to hear music, you had to be able to play an instrument or sing yourself. If not, you could listen to other people play or sing. All music that was written or performed was conceived to be played or listened to in a specific context. That could be religious music to fit the religious calendar, or ones marked to celebrate the major milestones in life, birth, marriage, death, or songs sung in the workplace to make the workload seem lighter or the hours speed by, or regal music to be used while crowning a new monarch, or martial music to stir our sense of nationalism in times of war. This can literally be music to march into battle, or just music to have a good old knees up on a Saturday night. Remove the context from any of these examples I have given, and the music loses so much of its potency and meaning and becomes something else. On a surface level, the music stays the same, but our relationship with the music changes. It is our relationship with music that defines what music is, not what the composer dreamed up or the musicians thought they were playing. So that was interesting to say, and everything that had gone before. In 1877, the American inventor Thomas Edison created a device he named the phonograph. It was a wax cylinder, and on it he recorded himself reciting really handsome lines. His recording was not new, but that one technological development would have more influence on the music of the 20th century than anything else that happened in the 19th century, be it the music composed by Beethoven or sung by cotton pickers in the slave plantations of Old Dixie. 10 years later, another American, Emil Berliner, took Edison's idea and ran with it. In 1887, Berliner patented his gramophone. That is gramophone, the capital G. On this, he could play flat, circular records that he had also made. And on these flat, circular records, Berliner was having music recorded, not just himself reciting nursery rhymes. By 1892, he was selling these records and his gramophones to play them. This was the moment when music could be contained within a physical object that could be bought and sold. Thus, the record industry was born. A small aside that I would like to make here is, within a few months of the first record and gramophone being sold,
Musicians Union, formerly Manchester. From around the turn of the century up to the First World War, there were three towering composers from the Western classical tradition making their greatest work. These three were Sibelius, Stravinsky, and Schoenberg. If you were to read the historical achievements of each of these three, you would learn that they, in their different ways, completely took apart how music was made and put it back together again using scales and sounds and methods never heard by Western ears. On a personal level, I have been a great fan of recordings of the music that they composed in those years. At the same time, Sibelius, Stravinsky, and Schoenberg were being revolutionary geniuses. There was an Italian tenor who sang no new groundbreakings, but stuck to the tried and tested canon of popular operatic arias. Unwittingly, this singer was far more revolutionary than might be ears. He was Enrico Caruso. Between 1902 and 1921, when he died at the age of 48, he had made over 260 recordings. These recordings sold in millions around the world. Caruso was the first superstar in the century. What Caruso did was change how vast swathes of the human population were related to music. In every continent, people were buying gramophones and records and listening to them in their homes, their own homes. This was changing all the rules that music had lived by since whenever music was first created thousands and thousands of years ago. People could listen to the Caruso records day or night, or at least until the neighbors. They could take the gramophone into any room in the house. They could even take it out into the garden. From all the revolutionary genius of Sibelius, Stravinsky, or Schoenberg, they changed nothing but the way their music existed and was communicated to its audience. What they were doing could have been done in 1876, and Enrico Caruso left them all standing. From here on in, all forms of music that existed anywhere in the world were helpless to Charles' fast evolving recording technology. Suddenly any music from any era or from any part of the world could be recorded, and these recordings could be played whenever the owner of the gramophone wanted. Music that previously would only be heard at coronation, or marching into war, or on a bandstand in a park or Parisian nightclub, could be heard wherever. He began to play records, have an almost fetish-like relationship with physical music. All around the developed world, our relationship with music was completely and utterly changing. With the vast majority of us, this was progressive. From a political point of view, it was total democratization. We could all hear the greatest performances of the century in our front room. No need to be at Mascalon, or the Bolshoi, or a whorehouse in Mason Street, New Orleans to hear the greatest music of our country. It did not seem to matter that we could never relate to music again in the way we had done only a few decades earlier. In the 1930s, John Lomax, the American musicologist and folklorist, started to crisscross the United States with a portable recording machine in the back of his car. Everywhere he went, he would record the folk songs being sung by the poor, the imprisoned, the outcast. Music that no one in culture and society would have ever bothered with before. Music that had been here today and gone tomorrow, or passed down from generation to generation, was captured for eternity on Lomax's machine. This music would be collected as treasure for the Library of Congress. Now that people had gramophones or radios to hear recording, nobody needed to create their own programs. The irony was, this machine that was responsible for folk music's slow death was going around the country to record it in its death throes. I, for one, am eternally grateful that Lomax did what he did, even though it marked the end of a life that had gone on for thousands of years. By now, the Musicians Union will become
come here, that the fast development of recording technology would make working musicians jobless. They were right. More and more people were choosing to listen to professionally performed recorded music rather than the shoddy amateurish live performances of local musicians. Fast forward a couple of decades. Teenager walks into a small recording studio in Memphis. He wants to have himself recorded singing some songs for his mother. This lad had only ever sung in public a few times, and even then it wasn't an amateur. Any aspiration he had to be a professional singer would have been the mere daydream. The owner of the studio heard the boy sing, thought he had some, and signed him to a recording contract. I guess you've already guessed that the teenager in question was Elvis Presley, arguably the most influential music of the 20th century. The difference between Caruso and Presley was that Caruso was already a highly regarded opera singer before his voice was recorded. Before Elvis walked into the Sun recording studio, was a note around this time, something else was happening. The long player, which we later learned to call the album, was fast becoming the format that most people listened to record on. On this long player, up to 40 minutes of music could be continued. On the old Shellac 78s, you could only get a few minutes on each side of the disc. Let's go again. This time, mid-60s. Around about then, two incidents took place that were to symbolize yet another massive shift in our relationship. Each of these incidents happened on separate continents and in totally different disciplines of music. One was in Canada, the other in England. In 1964, a young Canadian classical pianist who had already made a name for himself in concert halls around the world decided for various reasons to never play as a soloist concert again, but dedicated himself to making recordings. This pianist, Glenn Gould. The vast majority of the music he chose to record was music composed in the pre-recorded music. 18 months later, in 1966, a young English beat group who'd rapidly become the biggest thing since Stalin, the first beat group to fill sports games, even Elvis, made the decision to never perform a concert again. Beat group is the best. The difference between Glenn Gould and the beat group was that Gould wanted to record his interpretations of old music that he considered too intimate to be exposed to the concert platform, whereas the Beatles wanted to create new music that could only ever exist as a recording. For both of them, to go out and attempt to play their music live in front of an audience would have compromised, thus make null and void the complete res and detra of the art they were making. There had been pop record producers and avant-garde composers who had used the recording studio as their primary musical instrument before, but Glenn Gould and the Beatles were the first two major artists that made the decision that what they did as artists was from then on only going to exist as recorders. Before that historic point in the mid-60s, recorded music's prime reason for existence was to promote the live careers of music. Recorded music had been made so that the listener could have the illusion that they were actually listening to the musicians playing in that front room, or that they were at a concert where it was being performed. But 1966 was, to use an entire cliche, a tipping point. Now, I was actually going to say a tipping point, but a friend of mine read that's the ultimate cliche. Anybody who's talking about the American politics now, they will come up with it. From here on in, or at least until the end of the 20th century, more and more of the music performed live was only done so to promote recorded music. We now judge the careers of almost all music makers by the albums they have made, whether it was Herbert von Karajan, Miles Davis, Bob Dylan, Bella Kitty, or whoever the rock and roll sensation of the moment was. Thus, all ambitious young music makers aspired to get a recording contract, so they could be allowed to make albums. The recording of and the subsequent release of an album gave complete validation to their ambitions. The whole of the worldwide music industry was based on a business model built around the recording and selling of albums. Radios, music magazines, concert tours, music videos all existed for one reason: to sell more albums. It was in nobody's interest to question the restricted elements of the album format too closely, while the business model still worked, and we still love people more. Very few of us noticed that the physical restriction of the album was turning all music into almost exactly the same thing. From wherever the music on these albums came from in the world, or whatever tradition, be it classical, jazz, world rock, pop, etc., it all ended up as recorded music. We could walk into a major HMV convergence megastore and choose from upwards of 300,000 albums, every type of music known to mankind would be represented. And every year, there were thousands more of these albums being recorded. As our tastes became more refined, we stumbled across undiscovered contents. How could we ever plan it out? But this sense of limitless choice was an illusion. The reason why all this music, every corner of the world, every musical discipline was becoming the same thing was that it was all brought to us in a proper parallel way, equalized within the same narrow band of frequency, broadcast through the air to our ears by a similar electronic system. Close up, all this music may sound. Take a few steps back and you notice how similar and one-dimensional it all is. The technology that had evolved through the 20th century to record and produce music had morphed it all from just being a convenient and marketable format into one mega, all-encompassing genre, that recorded music. The relationship that a listener might have with any piece of recorded music was almost the same. Be a middle-aged connoisseur listening to Herbert von Karajan's recording of Wagner's Tristan und Isolde, or a 13-year-old girl in 1996 listening to the first Spice Girls album. We built and bought shelves for our collections of vinyl and CDs. We took pride on what these growing collections that we invested our money in said about us, in the same way as the content on the bookshelf. There was no reason that this should ever stop. By the time the new century was dawning, the iPod had launched along with iTunes and numerous file-sharing sites. This changed everything. This was the biggest development in the history of music in the past 100 years. We can now download from the internet with a few clicks of the mouse any piece of music from the entire history of recorded music. We thought we might want to transform it to music. All of this can be stored on the iPod in our pocket, to be listened to whenever, wherever, while doing almost whatever. The album as a format is now new. This thing that we've used to measure and judge the music makers for the last 5 decades no longer can be a product other than historic. The music that we own no longer said anything about it, as we can now own everything without investment in ourselves. The groaning shells of vinyl and CD were redundant. Music was just something that made the first right to work or jog around the heart more bearable. Something used to fill in the uncomfortable silence of all time the record of real life. The breadth and depth of meaning that music once contained was fast draining from. Art, like religion, exists to give life meaning. When any art form loses its meaning, it no longer has any real worth. No longer has a function other than something to gather dust and reveal. There are those
those that have thought of the iPod as little more than the modern equivalent to the wireless. The wireless unwittingly promoted the sales of the iPod does away with ever having to buy. There is another hush. Recording technology has so evolved that any kid doing a GCSE in music can record an album and stick it up on their MySpace for the whole world to listen. The holy grail of the recording contract and all the validation that comes with it is a thing of the past. Every person in every street has a CD to sell. The democratization that some so long for has undone the whole thing. The business model that has sustained a worldwide record industry is imploding faster than the cultural commentators can write their blog on the phenomenon. All of this is great news for the forward-thinking music makers working on the next thing. The flip side of all I have just gone on about in the last few minutes means music is now in the process of being liberated from the shackles of the recorded music genre. These forward-thinking music makers will not want music that can be downloaded off the internet or listened to at any time, any place, while doing almost anything in the future version. They will want to make music that is about time, place, and patience. They will want their music to reach parts of the soul that words and images have always failed to do. Nothing can commune with the unknowable like music. But most importantly, they will want their music to have meaning beyond something fill in the background while people get on with the drudgery of life. So that is my partner. If I'd written it tomorrow, it may have been totally different. Tomorrow, I might have noticed the flaws and holes that are already blindingly obvious to some. As for the history of music, that has been written by someone else. I'm gonna go get some more.